helping to secure the blessings of liberty to ourselves and our posterity. This is the Constitution Study on the America Out Loud Network with your host, Paul Engel. What is more important, the quantity of something or its quality? Depends on where it is. For example, with $100 bills, the quantity of them is much more important than the quality. After all, a dirty, crumpled $100 bill is worth just as much as a crisp, clean one. But not everything works that way. Take education, for example. We've all heard how important a quote-unquote good education is. Yet at the same time, we often give more credence to people with lots of degrees, giving preference to quantity. I claim that when it comes to education, quality is much more important than quantity. A couple of recent hearings on federal judicial nominees, I think, helps make my point. Hello there, everyday Americans. Paul Engel here with the Constitution Study, where we read and study the Constitution, teach the rising generation be free. I am glad you could join me today as we're going to talk a bit about education, and I have a guest coming on that has an interesting take on a solution to some of our problems. But I want to start out with education, specifically around the Constitution. Right? This is the Constitution Study. Our goal is to help people read and study, to educate themselves on the Constitution so that they can defend and assert their rights. So we take education seriously here. And, you know, I'm kind of an example of quantity versus quality in my own education. For example, people often ask me where I went to law school. I never went to law school. In fact, I've completed only 1 year of college. Granted, at the time, I was focusing on my IT career, but I even got my first programming job because I didn't have a college degree. As my employer told me, I wouldn't have to unlearn all the useless stuff they taught me in college that doesn't work in the real world. Now, here I am debating the Constitution with pretty much anybody that has an opinion. Even though I didn't take the steps of, you know, the college and the law school and all that, but because I studied the actual document, and I'd put the quality of my education up against pretty much anybody else I've heard in this country. Of course, that's my opinion, and I'm welcome to it. And you may disagree, and you're welcome to that as well. But what about people we put on the federal bench? What about people that are going to decide cases that take an oath to support the Constitution and to follow, decide cases based on the laws of the land, including the supreme law, the Constitution? Should we be okay with them having plenty of degrees and lots of years in college, but without a basic understanding of the Constitution itself? Now, I have a couple of YouTube clips. One from about a year ago, one fairly recently, that involve Senator Kennedy. It's a hearing on the nomination of a federal judge, someone nominated to hold a federal judgeship, and he's asking what I think are very basic, for the most part, basic constitutional questions. Let's start out with Charnel Jekhelgren, I think that's how it's pronounced. I'm not trying to mispronounce your name. Sorry. But this is about a year ago. She was up before the Senate Judiciary Committee being nominated for a judgeship in the Eastern District of Washington. And here's one question and answer that really caught my attention.
Judge, on the far end, tell me what Article 5 of the Constitution does.
Article 5 is not coming to mind at the moment.
Okay. How about Article 2?
Neither is Article 2.
Okay.
Now, I intentionally left the pauses in. I didn't cut them. I didn't extend them. I left them just as they were so you could get a sense of how this information isn't coming to mind. Right? This is not like a, oh, okay, I know the answer, or I don't know the answer. She's thinking. No, you're talking about two articles that are part of the original Constitution, which Article 6, Clause 2 defines as the supreme law of the land, along with laws of the United States made pursuant to that Constitution and treaties made under the authority of the United States, which comes from that Constitution. So here you have the supreme law of the land, and two of its original components, two fundamental parts of it, don't come to mind. Now, I will give a person some leeway, right? This is a stressful situation. She's in front of a Senate committee. You know, she's on television. You know, there's, I don't expect her to give a dissertation on these things, but I would think she'd at least come up with a simple answer. For example, well, Article 5 is how we amend the Constitution. Simple enough. Doesn't have to go into a dissertation and explain all the details of how, but to simply say Article 5 is how we amend the Constitution. Article 2 establishes the presidency, the executive power of the United States, and the powers delegated to it. If you're going to be a federal judge, I would think that this would be something you'd be very familiar with. I'm not surprised that she's not, because in my, granted, somewhat informal poll, I've asked attorneys for years now, when you were in law school, did you study the Constitution or did you study constitutional law? Which, by the way, is not really law. It's just the opinion of judges that they treat as if it's holy writ. In the roughly 5 or so years that I've been asking people this, asking people who've gone to law school this, I've had one gentleman tell me he studied the Constitution in law school. Now, I've had a few say, well, I didn't do it in law school, but I did it anyway. Great. But law school, what our supposedly legal system puts up as a requirement to, quote unquote, practice law, to be an attorney, to be a judge, is not teaching the supreme law of the land. But then listen to the next one. This is where I think Senator Kennedy is getting just a little cheeky.
Do you know what purposivism is?
Okay, here's another issue I get into. This, I call this cheeky because this is what I refer to as a $5 word, right? It's the type of word you use when you try to impress someone with your vocabulary rather than simply speaking plainly. I admit, I did not know the definition of purposivism, so I looked it up. It's any of various theories of nature or of human and animal behavior that regard purpose or conscious intent as a basal fact. In other words, as I understand it, it's the idea of what is the purpose behind our actions, right? When you look at human behavior, for example, you look for the purpose behind it. What is the basic purpose of how we act? Okay, so I admit I had to look it up. But I have to ask you, why use the word purposivism as opposed to simply saying, you know, do you understand the purpose of human nature? Do you understand the basics of it? But listen to this nominee's response.
In my 12 years as an assistant attorney general, huh? And my 9 years.
Okay, 12 years as an assistant attorney general, 9 years as a judge. I would not be surprised. Did you tell me you've never encountered the term purposivism in any of your legal briefings? Okay. Again, it's one of those, I thought it was a bit cheeky for Mr. Kennedy to ask that. But in 21 years of legal work, you have never encountered Article 2 or Article 5 of the Constitution of the United States? You were required to take an oath or affirmation that you would support the Constitution, and you have no clue what it says, and you believe you are qualified for this job? the president seems to think you're qualified for this job, and I don't want to go into that. But that does that show you the difference between the quality of an education and the quantity of an education? She'd attended college. She'd attended law school. She'd worked 21 years in the legal field, and she'd never encountered this Article 2 or Article 5 of the Constitution. Okay, let's take a look at the other clip. It's a longer clip, but I want to focus on certain parts of it because I don't want to go, they go rambling on a bit. This dealt with a different judge that was up for nomination, and Angela Martinez. And let's start off with the senator's first question.
Judge Martinez, tell me about state police power.
Senator, my understanding of state police power is the authority of the state officials to enforce state law.
Now, I have a pretty good clue where Senator Kennedy's going here. It's the fictitious idea that the 10th Amendment confers to the states the ability to enact certain laws and to protect the people. Of course, there's one small problem with that. That's not what the 10th Amendment says. The 10th Amendment says the power is not delegated to the United States by the Constitution, nor prohibited by it to the states, are reserved to the states, respectively, or to the people. It doesn't, you know, the 10th Amendment doesn't delegate to anyone any power. It says, listen, if it isn't specifically delegated to the United States, it's reserved. It is kept by the states. And again, it's this concept of police power of being the ability to deal with the health and welfare of its citizenry. But that's not dependent on the 10th Amendment. That would be dependent on the state constitution, which is the authority given to state governments and their political subdivisions, what powers they are delegated. So I kind of know where Mr. Kennedy's going. It's constitutionally wrong, but the answer that the Judge Martinez gave to me is reasonable. It's the police power, at its most basic idea, is the ability to enforce law. But then Mr. Kennedy has an interesting follow-up question.
Well, what if the state law is in violation of federal law?
Well, we have the Supremacy Clause under Article 6 of the Constitution that provides that federal law is the supreme law of the land. Yeah, but
okay, I need to interrupt before Mr. Kennedy interrupts. That answer gets partial credit. The Supremacy Clause is under Article 6. It's actually Clause 2. But it does not say that federal law is the supreme law of the land. Oh, no, 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 no. It says the Constitution and laws of the United States made in pursuance thereof and treaties made or which shall be made under the authority of the United States are the supreme law of the land. So if a state law contradicts with federal law, the first question you have to ask is, well, does the federal law violate the federal Constitution? If it enacts a power not delegated to the United States, then that law is void. Not my words, ladies and gentlemen. Alexander Hamilton and the Supreme Court, in at least three cases, Marbury versus Madison, Ex parte Siebold, Norton v. Shelby County, they all state that unconstitutional acts are void. So again, partial credit. But then let's listen to the how Kennedy interrupted.
That's not an exercise of state power. What's the origin of state's police power?
My understanding, Senator, is also from Article 1 of the Constitution, where the Congress was enumerated certain powers, and under one of the provisions of Article 1, anything that was not specifically enumerated.
You don't think it's Article 10?
Okay, this is confirming my assumption, my beliefs of where Senator Kennedy was going with police powers and the 10th Amendment. But did you hear her answer? She goes, well, Article 1, Congress has given some enumerated powers, and somewhere in there it says that the powers not delegated to them retain the states. No. The Article 1 does create Congress, and it does delegate to it most of its powers. But I think she's confusing that with the 10th Amendment. And then it's interesting because Senator Kennedy, I believe, simply misspoke when he said Article 10. There is no Article 10 of the Constitution, but he meant the 10th Amendment to the Constitution. And he's prodding her to this.
Well, Article 10 has to also, is also applicable.
Actually, the 10th Amendment, what does the 10th Amendment say?
The 10th Amendment provides that any specific power that was not given to Congress or denied to the states applies to the states and the people.
Again, maybe partial credit, maybe, because the 10th Amendment doesn't mention Congress. It says the power is not delegated to the United States. And it's not that the powers are now applied to the states and the people. They're reserved to the states or the people, meaning the states and the people had this power before the United States existed. It's the states and the people that are delegating power to the United States. Now, with this twisted view of the Constitution, what kind of opinions do you think you're going to get from a judge like this?
And that's the origin of a state's police power, right?
Yes, Senator.
Well, that may be the common judicial philosophy, but that's not true. A state's police power comes from the state constitution that formed the state and the state government. The state constitution created the state and the state government and delegated to it enumerated powers, including what is frequently what is called the police powers, as they're currently defined, meaning to care for the health and welfare of the citizens. Okay, let me squeeze in one more before we go to break.
The Constitution's pretty clear that you have to have an enumerated power in the Constitution, right, in order to be able to do something?
Well, it's my understanding, Senator, there are enumerated powers, but there are also implied powers in the Constitution.
Well, the 10th Amendment makes it quite clear. There are no implied powers in the Constitution. This is a myth made up by judges in order to get around constitutional limitations. So again, is this person qualified to be a judge, a federal judge? Absolutely not. If you don't have a basic understanding of the supreme law of the land, in my mind, you are not qualified to hold these offices. And again, I think a lot of this has to do with the education system. Mr. Kennedy, I believe, went to law school. The nominated judges went to law school, but they don't have a basic understanding of the supreme law of the land. But these are the people that are being appointed and serving as federal judges. Okay, I've run long. Let me jump to a quick break. Before I go, though, please go to constitutionstudy.com/FlynnMovie, F-L-Y-N-N-M-O-V-I-E, one word. You'll find out more about the General Flynn's movie, Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost. You'll have the opportunity to purchase tickets, pre-order the DVD, and even get tickets for the live event. Again, that's constitutionstudy.com/FlynnMovie for more details. And when I come back, I'm going to have an interesting interview from a lovely lady who has a great idea, I think, on how to help the constitutional education of our youth.
You've all heard Dr. McCullough and others share over and over the value of keeping your sinuses cleansed. It's a smart move all year, but even more so when we're cooped up inside. It's not really open for debate any longer. Those that live smart and live well pay attention to nasal and oral hygiene. Cofix RX has just the tools for the job with our nasal and throat cleanse. Click the Cofix RX banner on AmericaOutloud.shop to get 20% off your entire order. That's right, AmericaOutloud.shop. Use coupon code OUTLOUD. That's coupon code OUTLOUD for 20% off your entire order.
Use Cofix RX because it works.
The pandemic may be over for some, but millions of Americans are needlessly suffering from the long-haul effects of toxic spike protein from COVID-19 and the vaccines. You've heard Dr. Peter McCullough and his team at The Wellness Company discuss the harmful effects of spike protein in your body. And now they found the solution. The miracle enzyme nattokinase. Their spike support formula contains nattokinase, the most compelling and scientifically supported approach to safely clear spike protein out of the body. What's more, spike support is optimized with other all-natural, non-GMO ingredients, like dandelion root, to help prevent spike protein from binding to your cells. everyone should take daily spike support so you can feel your best. America Out Loud listeners can go to OutLoudCare.com today and use code OUTLOUD for 25% off your first order.
ASEA believes that inside each of us is the potential to feel our very best. Our redox-based products tap into reserves within you to power your personal well-being. Make our breakthrough products an essential step in fulfilling your greatest potential. ASEA, we power potential. For exclusive savings, use code OUTLOUD to save 15% off your first order today.
Welcome back, everyday Americans. You've rejoined the Constitution Study. Today, we're talking about the difference between quality and quantity when it comes to education. As promised, I have a guest. Christine Altenberger has this wonderful foundation where she's trying to help our young folk learn more about the Constitution without them simply going, ew. Christine, thank you for joining us here at the Constitution Study.
Thank you, Paul, so much for having me. And thank you for all the wonderful work that you do as well.
Thank you. You know, I stumbled across an interview you did, and I loved it because it's how do we get the young people, how do we get them education about the Constitution without it just seeming like it's another class in school or it's another thing I have to do? How do we make that work? And I think you and your foundation came up with a very interesting idea. Tell us a little bit about it, please.
Yeah, so what we noticed was, and I'm sure many people in America notice this, is that America is on a dangerous path. The kids in America are not learning about the Constitution because the schools are not teaching it. So that leaves future citizens ignorant about our founding documents and principles. And even worse, some of these schools are actually portraying America in a negative light. So instead of molding citizens, they're actually molding activists. And so I know that sounds crazy, but the Foundation for the Restoration of America exists to solve this problem. So we've created this scholarship program where we incentivize students to take these courses that are provided by Hillsdale College. The courses are on the Constitution, the Declaration of Independence, the Bill of Rights, and we incentivize the students with scholarships. So the courses are provided by Hillsdale College. So if these students take a couple of courses, they're free courses, they are eligible to apply for scholarships here at the foundation. We are giving out, we have two $10,000 scholarships, two $5,000 scholarships, and 39 $2,000 scholarships. We gave away $100,000 last year, and we're awarding $100,000 as well, or more this year, for students who take these courses. So pretty much the kids just have to go to our website, and we lead them to the free Hillsdale courses. They take the courses, they get a certificate when they complete the courses. They come back to our website, go to the application. There's three questions on the application that the students need to fill out. It's limited to 2,500 characters, so it's a very short little paragraph that they need to fill out on three different questions. And the kids will just fill that out, and then they'll download their certificates of completion from Hillsdale College to show that they've taken the courses. From there, we go through the applications and we pick the winners. Any student that is an American student age 16 and older, they are eligible to apply for these scholarships. The scholarships can be used for college, university. They can be used for trade school. Any student can take these courses. So even if you're a homeschool student, you are eligible. If you're in trade school, you are eligible. So our goal really is to just have every American student really learn the truth and learn about our founding documents so that they can stand up for their freedoms and know what their freedoms even are.
I love it because it reminds you a little bit of the spelling bee, right? Because why would kids go through the pain of memorizing and figure out how to spell these words? Well, it's for the scholarship that comes at the end. Kind of the same thing, right? You go through a Hillsdale College class. I've taken several classes from Hillsdale. And that enters you in a chance. Now, You say you gave away $100,000 last year. You're looking to give away $100,000 or more this year. Where are you coming up with the money for this?
So year two. So we just went live last February. So we've only been around since at the end of the year, it was 11 months. We received over 500 applications. This year, what we're doing is going to donors and asking for donations in order to increase the dollar amount of the scholarships and also increase the number of scholarships that we're giving away. And the reason is we had 500 applicants, a little over 500 applicants last year, but this year we've created a bunch of partnerships. So we have partnerships now with Turning Point Academy, Catholic Vote, Moms for America, Moms for Liberty, and more. And we're going to continue to create partnerships with like-minded organizations that want to help educate these students. So they're going to help spread the word. So we're going to be getting a lot more applications. And so we want to be able to award these students, keep students incentivized by bigger, you know, the biggest scholarship we have now is $10,000. We want to be able to increase that and give away a lot more, a bigger donation to incentivize more and more students to take these courses.
So you are working with donors and partners to help fund this.
The partners don't fund it. That we're working with donors to help fund to get the scholarships, to get more money. But the partnerships are really there to help spread the word to their base about the scholarship program. And so they're leading people to our website. We have partnership pages that we create that a lot of the partners are actually putting on their own websites. So when people are on their websites, their followers, their members, there are actually links on their websites that go directly to our partnership page, which brings them to the scholarship program.
Excellent. So I'm sure you'd be loved to have more donors that will come in and help fund this. So let me ask you a question. You're talking about you have the different levels of scholarship, and what's the criteria that you would use to differentiate, say, the $10,000 scholarship winner rather than the $5,000 or the $2,000?
Yeah. So what we do is we review all the applications. It's to make it fair and equal for all American students. We don't look at punctuation. We don't look at spelling. We're not looking at, extracurricular activity of these students in their schools. What we're really asking for is, what did you learn from taking these courses and how did it change your life? What are you going to do in the future to help keep freedom in this country? So we don't care about grade point average or anything. We're looking at what, by taking these courses, how did that change the student and how does that make them want to help defend freedom in America?
I like it. We don't have to worry about DEI in any of this. You're worried about what impact it, which actually I think is helpful, not only from the standpoint of improving the program over time. You know, if you find multiple people saying, well, this part really spoke to me, or this, it can help fine tune some of that. But it's a nice, it makes it a nice feedback loop. You've done it for just over a year. You've gone through one round. Anything really stand out from that that first round of scholarship recipients and applicants?
Yeah, absolutely. These kids are telling us why. I even have students that are in college and they'll say, why didn't I learn this in my grade school or my high school? Why isn't my college teaching me this? I don't know this stuff. And I want to go spread the words to my friends to take these courses to learn about their freedoms, because I don't think my friends know this either because they're not teaching it in the schools. I have a quote here from one of our applicants. His name is Sebastian. He's from Florida. And Sebastian says, to preserve freedom in America, we must educate those who've lost sight of the United States Constitution. Today, two main factions exist in America: those who have forgotten the Constitution and those who avidly reject it. So to me, we're putting together all these student quotes so that we can show people, like, this is really making a difference in these kids' lives, and they're not learning it. And the love for our country that they're showing in filling out these applications is is just amazing.
I love that because you're seeing, I have no idea how old Sebastian is, what grade he's in, but you're seeing somebody that recognizes, so you're talking 18 and under, you're talking somebody who recognizes that there are people who are ignorant and there are people who are actively fighting the document that helps protect our rights. And to see that and to recognize that and hopefully inspire him to continue to work harder on preserving his rights and by extension, the rights of his fellow citizens, fellow Americans, fellow human beings. It sounds very cool. That's why when I saw or watched the interview and I reached out and said, I'd love to have you on the radio program. I think I was right. I think my audience would be very interested in this. Please tell them, where can they send? Now, I'm assuming it's the parents that are convincing the children to go take the class and apply for the college. They're not doing it themselves. Where can we send our parents that would like their children to participate in this?
Yeah. So any student, parent, grandparent, leader, coach, they can lead the students to our website, which is ffroa.com. Again, that is ffroa.com. And I will send you a link as well. That is the Foundation for the Restoration of America.com. That will take them to all of the information about the scholarship program. It'll tell you about the courses, the question. You can look up the application ahead of time and see what the questions are going to be at the end. So we're just hoping for more and more students in America to take these courses. We've reached over 43 different states. We even had an application from the Virgin Islands. So in the first year with no partnerships, you know, I think we did pretty well. And I really expect that this year is just going to explode. And it already has because of interviews that I've done and also the partnerships that we've created with these other organizations.
So speaking of that, if someone wishes to partner with you or if someone says, you know, I'd really like to donate to this, where would they reach out?
So they can reach out also at ffroa.com. There's a direct link that they can email us and get information. There's a donation button there. If they would like to talk to me, they can just send the question through the website and I will get right back to them.
Wonderful. And while you're at it, can you tell us a little bit more? You know, the Foundation for the Recovery of America?
The Foundation for the Restoration of America.
I always get that wrong for some reason. So what else does the Foundation for the Restoration of America do? I'm assuming they're trying to, I don't know, restore America?
We are trying to restore America. We have other pillars that we're creating right now where we haven't gone live with them yet. So really right now we're just trying to educate the American youth about our country, our founding documents, and have them learn the truth about it, you know, learn about our founding and just know that we're the last free country in this world. And we have to really, everybody has to step up and defend our freedoms.
I love it. I love it for a couple of reasons. All right. I love it. Number one, because it's a group of people that saw a problem and rather than saying, you know, someone should go fix that, they said, what can we do to fix it? And I'm glad to see to hear that it's growing. And I absolutely want to help with what you're doing. We've talked about that a little bit already as we set up the interview, but I also like it because I know the term grassroots gets overused, but it literally is the American people saying, let us fix, we see this problem, let us fix it. We don't need a government program. We don't need a government grant. We don't need government's permission. And we can help educate our children, and it doesn't need to happen in school. I'd love if it did happen in school, but let's face it, a government-run school isn't interested in telling students that they're not dependent on government. So I love the program. I encourage people to check it out, ffroa.com. Yes, I'll have a link in the show page when it posts in a couple of days. But before we run out of time, is there anything else you'd like to tell us about the FFROA and what they're doing and maybe what plans you can give us a little sneak preview of?
Well, we're just trying to empower more defenders of the Constitution. You know, we just, it's kind of scary and sad, everything that's happening in our country right now. But ultimately, I'm filled with a lot of hope and optimism just because of all the amazing students and what they're telling us from learning about this program and learning about our country. I know that it's going to make a big difference.
I think it is as well, and I definitely plan to keep in touch. I'm going to encourage my audience, again, check out ffroa.com, whether you have a student that wants to participate, whether you want to partner with them, donate to the cause. Let's show the world and those people who think we all need to be dependent on government. We don't have to. We can educate ourselves. We can educate our children. Christine, thank you for your time. It's a wonderful organization, wonderful program. I hope to see it grow even more over the next few years.
Thank you so much. And I want to mention one more thing that I did not mention. These scholarships can be used for trade school. So a lot of people think if I get a scholarship, I can only use it for, you know, college, university. Anybody that wins a scholarship can use it for private high school. If they're going to private high school, we know how expensive education is right now, especially private schools. They can use it for college, university, and trade school. So that is something that a lot of other scholarships do not offer. We just want the kids to be educated, continue their education with whatever they want to do, and we want to help fund that for them.
I love it. Christine, again, thank you for your time. I'm so glad you got to join us. And if you want to find out more, ladies and gentlemen, again, ffroa.com. We'll have more links and information on the show page. You'll find that page on AmericaOutloud.news, which is a great place to go to find the latest news and information. But I'm going to ask you, just as, you know, Christine here, she found a way to help us, there's a way you can help as well. And that's to take the articles, the stories, the videos, the podcasts you find on AmericaOutloud.news and share them. Share them with friends, share them with family, share them online. Whether you're working towards a scholarship or just sharing this type of information, you're doing more than just sharing news. You're helping to share the blessings of liberty.
Expert opinions, honest debate, and in-depth investigations are what you've come to expect from AmericaOutloud.news. We don't shy away from speaking the truth boldly and plainly. All that's missing is the propaganda that has infected legacy and social media. Get the best of down and dirty, wholesome American speak. Now is our time, my fellow Americans. America Out Loud Talk Radio. Liberty and justice for all.
Cholesterol, blood pressure, blood sugar, inflammation, and weight. These are all real-world problems that 87% of Americans are struggling with. Often, there are no symptoms, but left unattended, we become inundated with one health problem after another. It's time to fight back with HealRight. HealRight is a bar that you eat, but it's food as medicine that addresses the nutritional root cause of health issues in just 8 weeks. Developed by world-renowned scientists and backed by 15 years of research, HealRight is effective, but it's also delicious and works without additional diet or lifestyle changes. Step out of the statistics and use food as medicine. Visit HealRight.com/outloud or AmericaOutloud.shop and use the code OUTLOUD for 20% off.
Don't accept joint aches and stiffness as part of aging. Doctors at Advanced Nutrition Company, Healthy Cell, created joint health and mobility to support connective tissue, joint lubrication, and reduce joint irritation with curcumin, omega-3, chondroitin, glucosamine, and hyaluronic acid for joint comfort and flexibility. And Healthy Cell's not a pill. It's a gel you swallow. Get 100% drug-free joint support. Go to HealthyCell.com and use code OUTLOUD for 25% off your first order. That's HealthyCell.com. Code out loud.
Welcome back, everyday Americans. You have rejoined the Constitution Study. I hope you enjoyed that interview with Ms. Altenberger. It was I found it interesting. Like I said, I saw an interview and the idea of, hey, let's reward young people for learning a little bit about the Constitution. And I hope you'll consider supporting the work that we're doing. But since we're talking today about quality versus quantity of schooling, you know, it's interesting because America spends a lot of money. We spend more money per pupil than I think almost any other industrialized nation in the world. But is the quality of the education really all that good? I mean, when I was a kid, what did we look for a good education, right? You had the basics, you know, reading, writing, arithmetic. They gave us social studies, not history, but social studies, and well, a little bit of physical education. Well, I just saw an article where the governor of the state of Washington signed a bill into law mandating that public schools teach LGBT history starting next year. Now, okay, you want to study LGBT history. What are you going to not study because it's going to be replaced by LGBT history? I mean, I don't know. Currently, you have 6 hours a day, 5 days a week, maybe more actually nowadays, that you have them in school. And teachers complain they can't get all the work done, and now you're going to add something that, how does that make a better student? How does that make a better citizen to spend time studying LGBT history? It'd be really nice, actually, if you studied, oh, I don't know, the Constitution. You know, your states are required by law. Most of the states have laws that require they actually teach the Constitution around Constitution Week, but they can't seem to find time to do that, but they're going to find ways to teach LGBT history. And color me, skeptical, but somehow I think it's going to be more than just, here are the names and the dates. My guess is it's going to be a cheerleading exercise in education. Now, listen, if you want to offer an elective in LGBT history, fine. I don't see that as something that's compelling for an American citizen to need, right? Like, again, reading, well, it'd be nice if you could read. Writing, very good. Math, should be able to do things like go balance a checkbook and understand compound interest. We're teaching less and less of that. And again, the supreme law of the land, it's only 8,000 words, can't be that hard to teach for very long, but we get to the quality of this. Unless you are, unless you're planning on going into LGBT higher education, is that really the education that you need? Is it the quality of education? Again, offer it as an elective, right? You can have shop, you can have home ec, you can have LGBTQ history, Black history, Hispanic history, Asian history, American, American history outside of the basics of our nation and how it works and your role as a member of this country, as a citizen of this country. So I think you're focusing on the wrong things. And it's certainly the state of Washington, by mandating that the schools teach this, mandate that they teach your children about this, whether you want it or not. Well, they're not the only way that certain information gets included and other information gets excluded. For example, there's a Grand Canyon University student that said she's been silenced in her class while her... for offering her opinions in class, while the econ textbook that they're using is full of them. The textbook in question is Essentials of Economics by Gregory Manik, M-A-N-K-I-W. And this book was sent to an organization called the College Fix, and they looked at the syllabus and they found some interesting statements. In his book, this Harvard professor states, Because of the free rider problem, eliminating poverty through private charity will probably not work. Yet government can solve this problem. How? Taxing the wealthy to raise the living standards of the poor can potentially make everyone better off. The poor are better off because they now enjoy a better standing of living, and those paying the taxes are better off because they enjoy living in a society with less poverty. He criticized Donald Trump's inaction on climate policy. He said, right now, most people in Washington show little interest in funding sensible solutions that can attract support across the political spectrum. If and when that changes, the carbon dividends plan should be high on the list. Now, listen, these statements may or may not be true. The question is, does this author provide evidence? This is a situation I run into all the time. A lot of people making definitive statements without any evidence. Now, there was a student who said the whole book is propaganda, and apparently she was told that her opinions were not welcome in the online class discussion. And what apparently followed was a debate about, well, apparently she was not allowed to participate because the professor thought she was being partisan, but she pointed out the entire textbook is partisan. Partially because economics and politics tend to go hand in hand. And from my experience, that seems fairly true. But I find it interesting that differing opinions are determined to be political rather than factual. Again, I haven't seen the whole thing. I don't know all the details. But I have to admit, I don't find it terribly surprising that a class that uses a textbook that makes blanket statements, which may or may not be supported, would not want to hear countering arguments. Again, I don't know enough to make a definitive statement, but this does seem to follow a pattern in higher education and now even in secondary education. That is, information is placed as truth. It is rarely supported by actual facts and data, or actually proven to be supported by facts and data. Yet contradicting it is considered politicizing the process. Well, if contradicting this data is politicizing the process, if you don't have economic facts and data to support it, isn't that politicizing the process? I guess my question is, if you are a student at Grand Canyon University or a parent of a student, or even if you're considering Grand Canyon or any university, are you looking at the textbooks that they're using and determining the quality of the textbook? I have no problem with a textbook offering an opinion that is treated as an opinion. I have a problem with a textbook that offers an opinion and it's treated as fact, meaning it doesn't require supporting evidence. I know, I'm an outlier. I'm weird. You know the number of people that call me names online because they make these statements and I say, where's your evidence? However, I do think it's incumbent on students and parents alike to check the quality of the education you would get from a certain school or university. Don't simply send a child to a school because, well, it's a local school. It's the public school. I don't have a choice. It's my alma mater, or I like this school, or I can afford this school. They may be reasons to make a choice, but ultimately, are they the best reasons to make that choice? Especially college and university, when you're talking about spending tens of thousands, sometimes hundreds of thousands of dollars on an education, don't you want to make sure that education actually is a quality education based on the real world and not simply the opinion of so-called experts? Now, I saw another article about President Biden announcing he wants to cancel another $6 billion in student loans. And this is where the quantity versus quality comes in. See, we've spent decades telling people we need a quantity of people to go to college. That you go to college, and the good number news is you get more and more. Quantity of college education was more important than the quality of college education. Now, here, let me again give you an example. When I was in high school, I was expected to go to college. I was decided on a computer science major, so you know I had to go to college to get a degree to become a computer programmer. I got my first computer programming job because I didn't have a degree. Why? Because the quality of the education in the vast majority of the comps, what we used to call comp sci, right, computer science degrees, did not match the real world. It was less effective. Let me give you an analogy. Let's say you go to school to become a doctor, right? I think most people would agree that a doctor should go to college, pre-med, you know, go to med school. They should have a good quantity of education for all they need to know in order to be a good doctor. But never forget, do you know what they call the person who comes in last in their class at med school? Doctor. Just because they spent the time getting the education doesn't mean they got a good education. Now, it may mean that they may make more money than somebody else, but they are probably also going to have more problems with malpractice and other lawsuits. Now, compare that with somebody that goes to college, maybe they get a women's studies degree or something else like that. Now, how many jobs do you get that require a women's study degree? Not very many. And then they wonder why they can't get a job doing anything more than flipping burgers, because it doesn't matter how long they were in school, how many degrees they got, it was the quality of the education that matters at the end. And that's what I think we want to focus on when we're making our educational decisions. Are we looking at quantity or quality? Do we want our children to go to college because we've been told all our lives that a college degree will make you more money? Or because we believe the quality of the education they're going to get from that will have a long-term positive impact on their life? Let me put it another way. At the beginning of the program, I showed you examples of judges who were constitutionally illiterate. I personally think they should go back to the law schools and demand a refund. Don't we want our law schools turning out lawyers that actually know what the supreme law of the land is? See, it's part of the attack on America. The feedback that Ms. Atlin Altenberger received from her students, the one that said there are two types of people in the world, those who are basically apathetic about the Constitution and those who are trying to destroy the Constitution. Yes, ladies and gentlemen, our rights are under attack. And if you send your child to a college just because it's got a good name on it, but it's actually cranking up people that are there to destroy our Constitution, our rights, and our way of life, doesn't that make you part of the problem, not part of the solution? As I said, our rights, our liberties are under attack. Don't help to fund those that the companies and organizations that are attacking our right to live free, whether it be a college or university or a wireless carrier. So please join the Christian conservative wireless provider. Use your cell phone to defend your rights and the rights of your family, including your right to life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness. While we're at it, how about the pursuit of a good education and a good career? Go to patriotmobile.com/constitution to find out more. Be sure to use the code Constitution when you check out to receive free activation. And while you're going for that good education, if you're like me and you kind of get to the end of the day and you kind of run out of energy, you're having a hard time focusing, well, boost your short-term focus and your long-term brain power with Healthy Cells Focus and Recall Vitamins. That's right, vitamins. They work. I use them whenever I've got one of those days where I'm just fuzzing out. Now, you can find out how to get 25% off anything in your first order from HealthyCell by going to AmericaOutloud.shop. Find the Focus and Recall ad or anything and check it out. The website's HealthyCell.com. And guess what? You use the code OUTLOUD at checkout, you get 25% off your first order, and you can try more than just the Focus and Recall. Now, I hope you come back and join us here for the Constitution Study. We're heard every weekday at 4 p.m. Eastern Time on America Out Loud Talk Radio, heard on the iHeartRadio Network. You can also listen to the podcast. Every episode goes to podcast, generally a day or two after it's heard on the radio. You can listen in your favorite podcast app. But do me a favor, subscribe to the show. Leave us ratings and reviews, especially on Apple Podcasts. It helps other people find the Constitution Study as well. It helps us share this news and this information. And you can find all the links you need at the homepage at AmericaOutloud.news. But please, I want you to share this information. I'd love you to share this episode. I'd love you to share other episodes that you find because I think they're important. You know, a lot of people assume that I want you to share these links because, well, it gets more people to listen to the Constitution Study. It does. It's one of the reasons why I do it. But there's something more important. See, I think America I know America is in serious trouble. And I know a lot of it is because a lot of people just don't know, or a lot of what they know just isn't so. So when you take those links, the podcast, the page, the episode, and you share them, you're doing more than just sharing the Constitution Study. You're helping to share the blessings of liberty.